commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is The Contracting Experience.
Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we sit down with Special Agent Chris Graham from the Air Force Office of Special Investigation, OSI. Special Agent Graham is the Director of Operations at OSI's Procurement Fraud Detachment here at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and comes to us today to share some insights into OSI, life as a special agent, and the important role that the contracting community plays in protecting critical information and vital resources on a daily basis. Welcome, Special Agent Graham. May I call you Chris?
Yep, Chris is great. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Hey, just to kind of get the ball rolling to maybe set the stage, maybe something our listeners aren't aware of is the history of OSI. The office actually stood up as a result of a fraud scandal after World War II, right?
That's correct. In 1947, when the Air Force was standing up, there was a FBI investigation into a Major General Bennett Myers, who was in charge of a buying command here at Wright-Patterson, Wright Field at the time. And he was directing contracts to a company that he was a silent partner of, and basically benefiting from all of those awards to that company completely inappropriately. And soon after the Air Force was stood up, there immediately became a very important need to have an Air Force specific investigative agency. So the FBI actually loaned us one of their agents, Joseph Carroll, who was promoted to Brigadier General and then became the first director of OSI coming from the FBI. And then he completely stood up the organization in 1947, and the rest is history.
Wow. Yeah, that's the first I've heard of that. Hopefully that's news to a lot of our listeners. And then OSI is huge. How many detachments do you guys have, like, across the country, across the world?
So we have detachments pretty much wherever airmen are, we are. Because our mission is expands beyond just like the procurement fraud mission, which we're going to talk about today. We have like the criminal mission, the violent crimes. I think that's what people most know us for. But then also this procurement fraud mission, and then a counterintelligence mission as well. So because of that, we are worldwide. I don't know the number of detachments, but there's agents pretty much everywhere.
All right, cool. And then you kind of hit on it as far as an agent specialization. Do you specialize in any one aspect of the job, like procurement fraud that you mentioned, or is a special agent more of a generalized field?
Yeah, right. So I specialize in procurement fraud investigations. In fact, I was actually able to go through the an AFIT program out in California at NPS and studied acquisition and contracts management. In fact, one of your previous guests, Colonel Finkenstadt, was my thesis advisor out there. So from that, procurement fraud was the logical next step to really just do all things procurement fraud, right? And this detachment here at Wright-Patt, at least the one office I work for, we do, that's all we do is major procurement fraud investigations. And those detachments are typically co-located with major buying commands. So AFMC's here, and it's why we're here to support AFMC.
All right, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then I remember about 30 years ago, going old school, I attended the old Legacy Contracting 101 course. I remember we had several OSI agents in my class. Is that a requirement for all agents, or just those kind of going down this procurement fraud path?
So I'm not sure about what the current pipeline is. I know I went through the AFIT program, but then we've got some training, especially like OSI specific training for procurement fraud. And then I don't think we're sending people through the Con 101 anymore.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. And then something else our listeners might not be aware of is you are sort of rank agnostic, right? I mean, you guys have your ranks and your grades and promotion systems like everybody else, but they're masked, right? Your title is special agent.
That's correct, right? And the reason for that is to try and keep us kind of to retain that independence, right? Because we don't want to bring command influence into our investigations, to remain unbiased investigators. So that's why we'll wear civilian clothes. We'll wear our title as special agent. We don't go by military rank at all, even though it does exist. But that's more internal to our organization.
Right. No, and all good reasons for that. And then kind of the fun part, do you carry a sidearm on a daily basis?
Yes, we do. We are qualified and carry we have a couple different options. I carry the Glock 19.
All right, cool. And then as far as OSI go, you mentioned how it stood up, the history of it. What authority do you work under? Is there a official U.S. code, or where does your authority come from?
Well, so we enforce federal statutes, especially here in procurement fraud. The Title 18 is the criminal statutes, and those are the laws that we are enforcing. But then the specific authority, I mean, comes from the same Title 10 authority that the Department of Defense falls under, right? So the Inspector General. For the Secretary of the Air Force Inspector General's office.
All right, cool. And then just real quick, I have a whole lot of other questions lined up, but what's the best part of your job?
I love the problem-solving aspect of, especially of procurement fraud investigations, right? Because it starts with all of these indicators, these things that maybe don't feel right, and then you're kind of working backwards to put together the scheme to find the lie for all the money, right? And I love that, because I think of it as like one big puzzle that we try and have to solve.
Okay, right. And that actually feeds in extremely well to my next question. So I was gonna go, so in the movies or the TV shows, right? You mentioned, you know, follow the money, you know, putting together the puzzle. And maybe a show about a sister service comes to mind, right?
Right.
Like whether they're in Los Angeles or New Orleans, or I think now they're in Sydney, Australia. But it seems like they only work on one case at a time, and everyone in the office is dedicated to that one case, right? That's probably not realistic. Can you share some examples of what your usual caseload works like?
Right. You know, every case only takes 45 minutes, an hour with commercial breaks. I think of it as a team sport, right? So it's not all different from contracting. I have several friends that are contracting officers, and they manage several contracts at a time. Same thing with us. We're managing several different cases at a time, trying to work with our team of analysts, auditors, contracting officers to try and piece together the puzzle and present the case to the U.S. Attorney's Office to see if they are going to want to pursue the case and prosecute the case. And so, like I said, a team sport, right? So, I mean, contracting officers and the relationship with contracting officers is so important for procurement fraud investigations, especially.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then speaking of that, so my experience as a contracting officer has been that when you get that email from OSI or they show up at your desk, it's usually not good news, right? They're usually not there to pride myself on my data quality and my procurement acquisition lead time, right? Can you share some experiences you've had in interacting with the contracting community and how that interaction usually goes? Are we defensive? Are we cooperative? Hopefully we are. Probably some apprehension there as well.
I think initially there can be some apprehension because we're never the bearers of good news, right? We're never coming and saying say how great a contract is. But I think what creates some of that is is because we're bringing a problem, but it's not necessarily the contracting officer's fault. We're there to try and investigate a fraud. And what is a fraud? It's a lie, something that a company or an individual told the government that's not true to receive some sort of benefit from that. So it's important to understand what was told to the contracting officer and what the contracting officer was relying on to make decisions. And typically, once I kind of explain that, and that's the angle we're coming from when talking to contracting officers. I think I've worked with contracting officers and amazing relationship with several of them that have been invaluable to our cases.
Okay, and it just, you know, kind of a foot stomp for all of our listeners. I mean, that's the importance of that contract file, right? That's why we have all those memos. That's why we have those reps and certs. That's why we have that interaction and the dialogue and why everything, you know, should be documented, right? I mean, it probably comes in vital when you're investigating a case, right?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, we're not the experts, right? So we're really coming to contracting to first help us understand the document we're looking at. I've seen PNMs that are just incredibly convoluted, because even having gone through like an acquisition master's program, it still can be very complicated. And the contracting officer is so important, right? Because even in contracting, how we buy construction or pay for new construction on base is so different from how you manage a program. The contract's managed completely different.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then let's see, kind of piggybacking on that, I want to get into the kind of the procurement fraud in a little bit, but let me throw this one out, see if you have any thoughts on this. So our office usually gets a threat briefing about once a year from the intel community, right? In fact, just a few weeks ago, we saw a great presentation at our Contracting Worldwide Training Summit. Always goes over well. It's always one of the most popular briefings of the whole summit, but I'm always amazed at those charts they show at the end with the similarities between weapon systems deployed by the U.S. military compared to those deployed by China, right? Everything from fighters, bombers, drones, aircraft carriers, you name it, they appear to be nearly identical, but yet we don't do any foreign military sales with China. Would you like to offer any advice or reinforce the importance of cyber awareness and cybersecurity to our listeners? Maybe offer some advice, maybe even on social media.
Right, and I'll try to do it without sounding like the annual cyber awareness challenge, but it's important, right? Because adversaries try to exploit the social media and the cyber domain to gain an advantage and to find our vulnerabilities. And it's not just kind of from the identity theft standpoint, where you don't want to put your date of birth and your personal emails out on your Facebook account. It's also from the counterintelligence standpoint as well, because of adversaries will try and exploit research and development grants and contracts and our supply chain to try and, like I said, gain that competitive advantage. So everything you put out there, everything you're talking about, is it's so important to be aware of all the time, like who you are talking to, what information you're putting and sharing out publicly, because that might be something that our adversaries then try to exploit. Something like where you work, for example, is something then that might make you more vulnerable to some sort of adversarial attack.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And like an example I see quite a bit on LinkedIn, right? Folks are out there, you know, they're trying to market themselves, so they want to share their experiences, but then they throw out their, you know, top secret security clearance held it. Seems like you're attracting the wrong kind of attention there, right?
Exactly. And that's what we definitely want to avoid. And those threat briefings that you get are great, because they kind of talk about the latest how adversaries are doing and are trying to exploit that information. So it's really why the cyber awareness challenge is an annual requirement, right? Just to kind of like refoot stomp, like this is important. Be aware of all of these things that you're putting out there. And that ties back to what we're talking about with procurement, because it's not just your personal identity, but it's also ties to the research and development that the Air Force is doing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've mentioned the cybersecurity awareness challenge. Again, one of everybody's favorite. They love the cartoon animated, you know, looks like you're kind of playing an old Atari video game from the 80s sometimes, but again, very, very important. I don't mean to make light of it. That's another one, though. My favorite part of that, maybe it shouldn't be, but it's the summary of the prosecution at the end of it, right? You have they give you little glimpses into some case studies of those prosecuted and guilty of espionage. And it's really hard to believe that that stuff actually still happens. Right. I know you probably can't go into too many specifics. Some of those case studies are quite amazing. That how could you be so ignorant that you weren't going to get caught on that? Right. Or, you know, even worse, you know, the core values and everything else. Based on your experience and training, can you maybe share about a little bit of maybe the psychology of a fraudster? What makes a person decide to commit fraud or espionage against the government?
Sure. And there's been a lot of research into what the elements of a fraudster and kind of like the framework for spotting high risk fraud situations. And there's something that psychologists have named the fraud triangle. And the fraud triangle is the three different aspects that are typically present in the decision for someone to commit fraud. And those are pressure, rationalization, and the opportunity. Pressure could be like financial pressure. You think about maybe gambling debts or something like that. We talk into procurement fraud, maybe that's corporate pressure. Maybe it's pressure to get a incentive or a bonus or meet for like maybe a, if it's an incentive type contract, to meet that incentive to ensure that you're to maximize the company's profit, right? So that's where that internal pressure can come from. And then the rationalization comes from, and unfortunately, it's really easy to rationalize stealing from the government, because it's seemingly a victimless crime, because it's the government. And I think people fall into that type of mindset. I think Benjamin Franklin has a great quote: "There's no kind of dishonesty that otherwise good men will more frequently fall than that of defrauding the government." I think I butchered the quote.
But, no, I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. Right, but the point being that that we kind of rationalize it, but it affects the warfighter, right? Because it impacts our ability to provide necessary equipment for the end user, for the troops downfield. And then finally, the opportunity piece, just maybe the lack of internal controls, the lack of oversight, which allows people to fudge the numbers and commit fraud.
Right. Yeah. The fraud triangle. Perfect. And then not just contracting officers, but pretty much all of us. Right. It goes back to the you know, see something, say something. Right. It kind of becomes, you know, just kind of a buzzword. But it's true, right? If you see, you know, that triangle developing, right, you need to say something, or right? bring in the OSI folks, or at least, you know, take it up your chain of command, something you might be concerned with, right?
Yeah. And I think that the most important piece is reporting the fraud indicator. So just being aware of what the indicators are, right? I wouldn't want to ask contracting officers to go through and start their own a little investigation, but just being aware of what the indicators are, of what doesn't smell right, and then being willing to report that to OSI or to the DoDIG or to whoever to kind of investigate. And then we can look at it and kind of dig in, and that we have the resources to do that, right? Like I mentioned, we've got auditors, accountants, analysts that are so well equipped, and this is all they do, and they're so good at their job to be able to kind of like prove or disprove any sort of allegation.
Right. Now that's great. And again, very, very timely is our friends up at there at SAF AQCP. They just released the fraud indicator poster yesterday, or they didn't release it, but they posted it on Air Force Contracting Central under the Knowledge Center. And again, a lot of good information on there. Maybe most importantly is how to report something. Right. But they identified the fraud indicators and how, you know, the contracting community can help identify those and then means of reporting those. You can report them anonymously. You can report them formally, several different ways. Don't just sit around and watch things happen. Right. Kind of like the check engine light on the car. If you don't do something to it, it's probably not going to fix itself. Right.
Right. And I love how it kind of ties the indicators to the kind of life cycle of a contract, like pre-solicitation, solicitation, performance, and then maybe contract closeout. So I think it's a great graphic that kind of to think about, to kind of bridge that gap between I'm managing a contract to like where could the lie be, right? And what type of lie would be present pre-award versus maybe like during post-award in the performance.
Right, absolutely. So for some of our listeners that might not be aware, the Department of Justice website, justice.gov, provides an excellent resource for legal cases and prosecution for things such as contract fraud, breach of contract, workplace safety, everything else. If you want to dig into those case studies, right, they're public knowledge, they're out there, justice.gov. But are there any textbook cases that you can talk about that maybe OSI uses in training or maybe sort of like folklore for that, such as a poster for contract fraud?
Well, the textbook cases, when I think textbook cases, I think Fat Leonard, because you really can't talk about procurement fraud without talking about Fat Leonard. But there's some cases kind of recent that have been pushed out that I think really really show how the impact of procurement fraud. Earlier this year, a contractor in Missouri, Florence Metals, pled guilty after they were misleading the government in the source of the supplies that they were providing, some of the supplies being critical application items for weapon systems. They ended up pleading guilty, and that product substitution case kind of is an example of how people will try and take advantage of the supply chain, right? And those are end items that are going on to military weapon systems.
Right. Can you go into, like, I don't know what you can share on that, but how did they get caught, right? How would a contracting person know, you know, hey, these parts aren't domestically made. These are, you know, counterfeit parts, if you will. How do they get caught on that?
So I can't speak to that case in particular, but in general, some things like products failing before they're supposed to. Unfortunately, we see a lot of products come just with the Made in China sticker right there on it, and we like to call that a clue, right?
Yeah, you would hope. Yeesh.
But packaging, if things aren't packaged right. Anything like that can be an indicator that this isn't what we paid for. This isn't the right material. Obviously the DCMA inspection process will catch a lot of that for some of those more critical application items where DCMA is involved in the oversight of the contract.
Right. Yeah. Great folks at DCMA doing that inspection acceptance type stuff. And we probably do it ourselves, right? You get something from Amazon and, oh yeah, made in China, go figure.
Right. Right.
But
right.
That would be, you know, kind of on a much larger, much more important scale. That's what DCMA is doing in part, one of their many, many jobs. And then you mentioned Fat Leonard, but just as a recap for our audience, right? Major scandal, U.S. Navy, right? Air Force was not involved on that one. But yeah, Navy, I believe the 7th Fleet, again, very much procurement fraud, steering contracts illegally, taking bribes, kickbacks. Anything you wanted to put stop on Fat Leonard?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. There was a little bit of everything in the Fat Leonard case. One thing that does come to mind, though, is is just linking it back to that fraud triangle, the rationalization piece. You know, you read some of the news articles that come out, and the some of the senior officials who were involved in that scandal will have quotes like Fat Leonard was good for the Navy. He was helping us get the job done. And I think that's where you see that type of rationalization come into, like, to, and then linking back to the fraud triangle, they were kind of rationalizing the relationship and all of these things that Fat Leonard was providing them as just hard charging, let's get the job done. But in reality, it was bleeding the Navy out of all of that money, and it was a huge, huge scandal, passing classified information, all sorts of things.
Yeah, that rationalization, that's a key piece, right? It goes back to, you know, one of my favorite movies, A Few Good Men, right? You need me on that wall. You can't handle the truth, right? I do things that would make you weep, right? Just sleep under the very blanket of freedom I provide.
Right.
Sort of thing. But again, the aftermath, the effects to that, the long-term effects that we're still talking about, still recovering from are huge.
And just the public trust, right? Because we have to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars, and we break that public trust, and that completely erodes our ability to provide, like, provide national security.
Right, absolutely. And then you had another case you were going to bring up as well, military housing, I believe.
Yes. So this one is more of a cost mischarging example. The privatized housing company Balfour Beatty was. Like we talked about the incentive type contracts, right? So they had an incentive structure to their contracts, and were falsifying records to kind of hit that quarterly incentive. They pled guilty, I think, in 2022, and paid over $65 million in fines and restitution. So something seemingly like just kind of like cooking the books to try and hit that quarterly incentive, massive fraud scheme when you blow it up on the scale. And that money comes from military members, right? That's the military members BAH that was being abused in that case.
Right. Yeah. This is, again, it's phenomenal stuff. And it's just kind of reminding our listeners that, right, something, it might not be as big as the big Navy scandal or something else, but it's happening, unfortunately, hopefully not on a daily basis, but it's happening a lot more than we realize. And that's where we just all need to continue to be vigilant on that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We talked about millions of dollars. People, I think, will kind of We'll rationalize and then do what they can to try and unfortunately do what they want to be able to or can to try and earn that extra buck. And it happens, unfortunately, on a regular basis. But that's why we exist. All the internal controls that contracting puts in place are all designed to prevent that.
Right. And then do you have any thoughts on a lot of our contractor, you know, representations and certifications? A lot of times they self-certify, right? Oh, we are woman owned, or we are service disabled. A lot of those self-certifications, any danger in that?
Absolutely. So the women owned small business and the veteran owned small business programs are designed to promote like socioeconomic programs and that self-certification creates that opportunity for people to take advantage of that and get awards that were meant for somebody else. And that opportunity cost is the loss in those cases that drives and motivates us to investigate those cases, because sometimes there can be the sentiment, well, we still got what we paid for, but right. But the person, that company should not have gotten that award. It should have gone to a truly a women-owned small business, truly a small business, or a economically disadvantaged small business, right? Because those are the programs we put in place to try and incentivize and grow those small businesses.
Right. Yeah. So again, I love the fact you're tying back into that fraud triangle. In this case, that opportunity, right? The self-certification, that opportunity plays in there. And unfortunately, in that case, it's hard to find out until maybe after the fact, right? We can't research every single company. We rely on those certifications. But, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, it's like, we could have caught that maybe.
Exactly. And that's unfortunate, but that's part of, like, when you do find that out, it's important to still report that, to maybe prevent it from happening again. So the company does it once, gets away with it, or seemingly gets away with it, they'll likely try and do it again and use that for multiple different awards. So we definitely need to make sure that those are still things that it's like a woman-owned small business or a veteran-owned small business, and we're never dealing, and we're always dealing with the same person who doesn't fit that criteria. That might be, might not be the case, and we want to make sure that we prevent that, to ensure that going down the road, the right people are getting the awards, that and we're not awarding it to the wrong companies that are taking advantage of that small business program.
Right. No, great stuff. Again, Special Agent Graham Kurth, this has been extremely enlightening. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. A lot of times I don't think folks realize, you know, that relationship with OSI and contracting, and the important part we play in protecting resources, protecting vital information. Is there anything, any parting shots you'd like to share with our listeners? Maybe there's a question you were sort of hoping I would dive you into. Open mic. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I think we hit everything. I just maybe again reiterate the importance of you know, the see something, say something, reporting the indicators to OSI, and being open to when we come knocking to, and trying to understand the contract, just being willing to help us sit us down and go through the contract. That's invaluable. Like I said, procurement fraud, it's a team sport. So it's we definitely rely on contracting to, and they're definitely a crucial part of the team in our cases. So we can't thank contracting enough for what they do and the role they play.
Oh, yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely. Team sport. And again, you show up at the desk, you make that phone call. Hopefully we are not the ones under investigation. You're looking for our help in finding those that are under investigation, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. No, Chris, again, really enlightening. On behalf of the Contracting Experience Podcast, all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights into the world of OSI, reminding us all of the important role contracting has, and staying vigilant to protect our nation's critical resources. This has been an absolute pleasure having you. And thank you to all of our podcast listeners, followers, and subscribers. If you have any feedback, suggestions for topics, or future guests you would like to hear on the podcast, you can submit those via email to thecontractingexperience@gmail.com. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Contracting Experience Podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. Be sure to subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMC Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again on our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.